everybody. Welcome to the Good Evening Kitties podcast. My name is Melissa, your ghostess with the mostest, and today's episode is Season 2, Episode 16, Television Terror. Today I have with me Brandon from the band American Standards. Hello, Brandon.
Hey, Melissa. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Awesome. Thanks again for doing this. From what I've heard, you're a pretty big Tales from the Crypt fan.
Yeah, huge Tales from the Crypt fan. I think I always grew up loving horror, and Tales from the Crypt was kind of like the spookier version of the Twilight Zone for me, so it's just something that caught my eye.
Yeah, I was kind of snooping through your Facebook, and I saw that on there you have a Tales from the Crypt shirt that you wear quite a bit to your shows.
That's my go-to shirt. I got it for Christmas this past year, and now anytime I need like this, jump into the closet and say, okay, what am I going to wear for the show tonight, that shirt's normally it.
Well, and plus it probably brings up a lot of good conversations and things like that for people who used to watch it. So
there's a lot of people that I feel like I've never know that actually watch, Tales from the Crypt, that once they see me wearing a shirt, they start talking about their favorite episodes and stuff, which is really cool, because otherwise, how do you casually put a show that came out, 20 years ago into today's conversation?
Yeah, I didn't start getting into horror stuff until kind of later in my childhood. I was kind of a scaredy cat of like Halloween and things like that. Now, I did watch a lot of my staple for like trick-or-treating is we go trick-or-treating, and then when you're done, you go home and you watch Treehouse of Terror or Treehouse of Horror on The Simpsons. Yeah.
And those were always the best ones too. It's crazy because I always wanted them to make like a box set, and maybe they have this, but a box set of just the Treehouse of Horror episodes. But I feel like the way they get you is you only get one at the end of every season, so it's you got to buy the whole thing to get those Treehouse of Horrors.
Yeah, I wonder if they do have that. I bet it'd be kind of pricey though.
Yeah, either that or being a huge Twilight Zone fan, there's a lot of Simpsons, especially in the Treehouse of Horrors, but a lot of like satire and references to Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
So just if they compiled all those episodes, that'd be like my dream.
Well, yeah, one of my favorites that I always remember is that had something to do with Twilight Zone when Bart Simpson was on the bus, and then there was a little creature, the little gremlin trying to destroy it. And then at the end, it like tries to claw out Flanders' face.
Yeah, that one's great. And then another one that was really good is the alternate dimension one where he goes to 3D.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good Twilight Zone spoof. Pretty much any of those anthology series from that time I was huge into. Outer Limits is another one. Freddy's Nightmare was another one that was very much like Twilight Zone, or like Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, I always kind of thought they would go more after that episode on The Simpsons. I kind of wanted to see what was going to happen after he landed in our world, but they never continued it.
And if they try to continue it today, I'm not sure that I'd enjoy it as much.
Yeah.
With all the new writers and everything on there.
Yeah.
I don't keep up with it as much as I used to.
I'm definitely, the past like 10 years, I'm like, it's still on?
Yeah.
Like,
you put on those first 10 seasons, and I've probably seen every one 100 times. But anything newer, I mean, if it's something that came out even within the last 10 years, I might look at it and be like, is this a brand new episode? Halloween was huge for me.
Oh, yeah.
My dad actually used to make a haunted house every year, built onto the side of our house. He was a construction worker, so he would build, he'd get these 4x4s and build this whole separate house. He would dig up the backyard and build graves. He'd have, full-size coffins that people would jump out of. And my brother and I, especially my brother being 10 years older, and all his friends would kind of join in on it.
That's awesome.
And it got to the point where like the news would come out every year. There'd be a line around the block. The living on Elm Street was kind of like an added bonus to the spookiness of
it all. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Did you guys ever put anything from the movies into?
Yeah, we actually, so each year would have typically like different themes and stuff. And I think it was a lot based on the clearance that we purchased after Halloween. So it was like the day after Halloween, everything's like 75% off.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever seemed like the best to theme it off of, we'd kind of go off that. So, but my dad was the mastermind behind all of that.
That's awesome. So, yeah, we'll go ahead and get into Season 2, Episode 16, Television Terror. As always, John Cassier does the voice of the Crypt Keeper, and Danny Elfman does the theme song. The description here on the back of the box is, a TV shock journalist gives an on-air tour of an eerie haunted house. Tune in if you dare. And I like this one because it's not very, it tells you what's going to happen, but not really. Because some of the descriptions on the back of these boxes pretty much tell you what happens. Or shows you
get the
picture.
Twist at the very beginning, so you already know what to wait for.
Yeah, like even like episode 13, Corman's Calamity. Have you seen that one?
Sounds familiar. All the names kind of sound vaguely familiar. Then as soon as I see it, I'm like, oh, that one.
There's a cartoon artist, and he draws that monster in the dress.
Gotcha. Yeah, comes out.
Okay, well, they have a picture of her, like, on it. You think you would save that for the end, because she's kind of the main part.
The game. You got to give the spoiler alert if you're going to draw a picture of what the twist is.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they figure if you're buying this, maybe you're a fan, you already kind of know.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, at the time when the episodes were coming out, they would have used the same descriptions or the same pictures to promote it.
Yeah, maybe. But this episode aired July 17th, 1990. It was directed by Charlie Persini, who also was a stunt coordinator on TV Starsky and Hutch. The screenplay is by Randall Johnson and G.J. Pruss. It stars Morton Downey Jr., Dorothy Park from TV's 21 Jump Street, and Peter Van Norton from Police Academy 2, their first assignment. This one starts out, because, I mean, it's based on being on TV, so it starts out as, like, a screen, and it's showing the Crypt Keeper, and he gets on there, and he's like, "Hi, Mom," and, you know, he's talking about home videos, and he's just kind of bringing in the episode, and it's always neat, too. I always like how he'll have the book open on the desk there in the crypt, and then they always show, like, the EC Comics-type style cover for it.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like how they make the intro kind of a derivative of what the rest of the episode is. And I think Twilight Zone did that a lot, too. The one thing I thought actually in his intro is kind of funny, and drawing all these parallels to other anthologies, is he did, like, the old trope, the "this is filed under T for television, or terror."
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, I feel like Rod Serling used to do that a lot. You know, he'd just say a letter and say, "This is T for whatever."
Quick, what's your favorite Twilight Zone episode?
Ah, that's a hard one. I mean, like, all the classics, obviously, like Monsters on Maple Street are obviously good. Some of the, and The Serve Man, and pretty much anything that Simpsons has,
yeah.
Has spoofed. Some of the other ones that I don't think get as much play. I'm trying to think of the names off of the top of my head. I like, geez, put me on the spot. I can't even think of the names of them now.
Well, like, what is it about?
I mean, The Trade-Ins is a really good one. And The Trade-Ins is one I never hear people talk about, which is about the, like, the old couple. And it's like the, you know, they've been married forever and the old man's kind of getting sick.
Oh,
and
yeah, that one is, yeah, that one's good.
It's like, that's kind of like the tearjerker Twilight Zone. And it's I don't know, I think it's a really good episode. I just don't think people talk about it much. I think Judgment Night's a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
Death's Hand Revisited, the one about going back to the Nazi internment camp. That one's a pretty interesting one.
Yeah, there are quite a bit of episodes, really. One time on TV, I saw they were doing like a marathon, and ended up I just like taped a whole bunch of them, and it was like, there are a lot of episodes.
Yeah, and that's like the beauty of every anthology is, if you'll have some like ones that aren't so great, but you know, it's just like a half an hour of your life, and you get to the next one, and the next one could be good. So if it's not like knocking it out of the park every time, you're gonna have a grab bag of stuff that you might like and not like. Twilight Zone was always like, they would have these occasional like comedy type ones, and they were never really that funny, and those were the ones that were always like throwaways for me.
Well, and I also find that, like, I mean, nowadays I think people want it to always be good every episode.
Yeah.
In anthologies, but yeah, like you're saying, like with Tales from the Crypt or Twilight Zone, there's not everyone's always great, but it's still only like a half hour of your time, and there's usually something worthwhile in the episode, even if it's not
yeah,
like
still
a super standout.
A good story, whether it be something that you really latch onto or not. I think Black Mirror is a great modern example of that. You know, there's some of the best TV, I think, is some of the new Black Mirror episodes that are coming out. But then there's always a couple ones that are like, all right, this was still entertaining, but it's not something I'm going to talk to everybody about.
Well, and Black Mirror also, I've only seen like one or two episodes so far.
Oh, don't tell me you just saw the very first episode, the pig one.
Yeah.
Normally people that like watch that episode, that's like the kind of deal breaker. You watch
oh, I
that
know.
And you're
it's,
like,
I mean, I knew what sure I was getting is. Into. I knew what that one was about, but I could see how like a lot of people would be turned off after that because it's horrible. But I also know that like a lot, some of them are a little like you get pretty down on some of them. So I'm like, I don't know. Do I really want to? I have to take it in little pieces, I think.
Yeah, it's very dystopian in its approach. Everything's like a few steps ahead of where we're at now. And you always see a hint of truth and a hint of humanity in it of like, I can see it going this way if it was going like at its absolute version of where we're at.
With Twilight Zone, I like a lot of them, but my favorite one that always stands out to me is The Midnight Sun. Do you know that one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good one where the girl is painting and it's a... obviously, based on the name, just getting hotter and hotter out.
Yeah. Yeah, and then like there's, like, the twist, and then I love that one. Something about it just freaks me out that there's, like, nothing you can do to stop it.
And the crazy thing about, like, to draw a parallel to obviously, Tales from the Crypt, a lot of them are built on twists, but like some of the differences, I feel like with Twilight Zone, a lot of the twists are, you know, more moral lessons and have deeper meanings. Sometimes the twists for Tales from the Crypt aren't super deep, but it's like still like kind of a, the character gets to come up. And so like this, this horrible character, especially in this, like in this episode, mm-hmm. this person that's just not very likable gets kind of their comeuppance for being an unlikable character. So it's not this like super deep thing, but it's still like, it has that twist at the end.
And also what I like too at Tales from the Crypt is a lot of times when there is something supernatural, the people take it very well.
Yeah, you know? it's kind of the now when you look back at horror movies and they do all the just like the stereotypical things that you're so used to seeing, like going into a, you know, a dark basement that you know there's going to be something to jump out. All those mistakes are made in Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah. So yeah, so get started on this episode. It's opening up to, there's a man named Horton Rivers and he's hosting a live show on TV that's similar, kind of the Unsolved Mysteries mixed with like a Ghost Hunters, like in your face kind of stuff. And I don't know if they always go live, but on this event they are. And it's supposed to be like a really big ratings get for them. And they're going to this haunted house that has this bad murderous history. And it starts out where they're all set up at night in front of this house. The production team is there and they got police tape around the place and things like that. And they're kind of opening up this area for the set, and it's a really old house. This guy, Horton Rivers, no one really likes him. He's not the best guy to be with. He's very arrogant. And they're taping at this house called the Ritter House, where Ada Ritter took in transient men and she killed them for their social security checks.
Within the walls of the once stately manor right behind me, Ada Ritter, aging matriarch of the Ritter Home boarding house, routinely murdered her elderly guests for their social security checks. The bodies were dismembered and buried in the basement. 12 victims in all. Police speculate there may have been more. Only Ada Ritter, whose suicide prompted the investigation, knew for sure.
Yeah, I wonder, is that big money? Social security checks?
Well, if you're not doing anything for them, yeah, probably. Say you get $500 a month social security for 12 men, that's...
a lucrative career. Yeah.
I mean, it's happened before. This is definitely not something they made up. I'm sure, I know... Because I like a lot of, like, true crime stuff. And so yeah. I know that this stuff has been done before. Especially back when you can't really track a lot of people's identities.
Something you would hear on the, what's that, My Favorite Murder podcast mm-hmm. or something?
Yep.
My girlfriend's a huge fan. And we actually just went to their live event here in Phoenix.
Me too. We went in December.
It was nuts. It was like, I don't know if it was sold out, but it was damn near close to it. Mm-hmm. I think it actually was sold out. And it was at a fairly large arena.
Yeah, it's pretty fun show. I like that one. But yeah, it was a good show. We had fun.
Yeah.
I took Mike and he'd never really even heard it before, but he had a good time. But yeah, so I mean, it's definitely happened before, these kind of things. Like I said, I listened to a couple other ones too, like Last Podcast on the Left I listened to.
Oh yeah, that whole series they just did on
Jonestown?
What's it called? Yeah, I liked it.
I don't know. My favorite, I don't know. If I had to pick a favorite, I guess a favorite serial killer, if you had to pick one. mine is H.H. Holmes.
Okay, yeah. They're doing that movie soon too, right?
Yeah, hopefully. They keep putting it off, but only because it was the perfect time for him to do those. Like, had it been any other time in history, I don't think he would have been able to get away with having, like, three separate marriages and taking all these people in that no one was keeping track of.
Changing his name. Yeah, I mean, as soon as you change your relationship status on Facebook three times to married, people will start raising flags, right?
Yeah, but just, like, all this stuff. And, like hiring and firing different people to build the house and all this stuff, you know, that it wouldn't have got away. There's so many more permits and things nowadays you have to have. So
yeah, you'd love the Museum of Death in Los Angeles if you're into this.
I've considered going.
Yeah, it's got all the serial killer stuff, and it's got their letters from prison, and it's got, like, some of the, obviously, like, Charles Manson has got his first acoustic guitar and stuff, which is super creepy because it's got, like, glittery unicorn stickers on it.
Oh, man. So this, you know, they're talking about this thing at the Ritter House and all this, and, you know, they're setting up the opening shot. They're going to be live. I kind of find it weird that this house is supposed to be so haunted and so bad that they just, like, sealed it up for the past 5 years.
Yeah, and keep the police tape, which I think they actually mentioned in there, which is kind of a funny touch.
Don't you think it's a little stupid having a police line still up 5 years after the case was closed?
I tried to tell them.
Which makes it just look more appealing to, like, teenagers and things like that, and no one's around here, so let's rob the place, or, you know, things like that. They don't burn it down or anything. They just seal it up for 5 years. And so the main thing is that these people are going in live tonight and unsealing the house and finding out, you know, what they can find of Ada Ritter and these men, and try to see how creepy it can get. and, you know, all for ratings and things. And so this Horton Rivers guy is talking, and a lot of, like I said, a lot of the people in this production thing hate him. He's real hard to work with. There's a woman there who's kind of like the head of the production thing with the audio and stuff, and she goes out to kind of talk to him and tell him that there's a psychic there that's going to help them out named Roland Wirtschafter, and he's helping them with the house, but he's too afraid to go in the house. So he's like, I'll stand outside on the porch, but you go in because this house has a lot of bad vibes to it.
And a great touch to that psychic is right before they go on air, Horton saying, you know, who is this guy? And then the second the camera's on, he says something to the extent of like, I'm a big fan of your work. Yeah. So you can just tell it's kind of playing into like his unlikable character and how fake he is and how it's all about the ratings.
Such crap. He's like acting like he knows this guy and this guy's like, whatever. So he's out there and they're setting everything up. And and that the woman, apparently they're kind of an item, or they've been, you know, sleeping together. And so he's, you know, I think she's hoping it will up her career. But he's basically just telling her that she doesn't have what it takes for, you know, for this kind of life and for the TV show thing. And so it really kind of just pushes her over the edge, and she's just really not feeling it anymore. And part of me is like, good, because you can do better. Like, it's like, you don't need this. And so they go
and
ahead.
This also sets up the character too, when she's like, you know, for the next, you know, episode or whatever.
Okay, you got a choice next week. You got the Satanists, you've got the impotent transvestites, Soldiers of Fortune, a neo-Nazi black group. And the culture show for Thursday is breast implants.
Bingo. Got any strippers?
Yes, we got a combo on that one. Do you want the strippers who were in the same convent together or the ones who use animals?
I'll take the nuts.
Good choice. They're as close to heaven as you'll ever get.
Just kind of all the most ridiculous stuff that she could put in a sentence.
Well, and then he also makes a comment about, you know, stuffing a sock down the front of his pants, but then he doesn't need to do that.
Got a great idea. Listen to me. 1960s rock music. I get the outfit, the Morrison jacket, the tight leather pants. Stuff the sock down in front.
Nice touch.
I don't really need it, Sam, all right?
That age-old trick, you know, done it many of times.
And so they're not getting along. Nobody likes them. They're unsealing the door, which it looks like they took, like, a plank of plywood and, like, literally sealed the door. So it's just Horton and then this camera guy named Tripp, and they're going to go in and take a look around, and it's all live. And so they get inside. And it's a neat house. I like watching like House Hunters and stuff sometimes. And so I really like, there's a lot of Victorian type charm to it. Like it's all wood and there's a lot of wooden trim and these pocket doors and stuff. And I really like that kind of stuff. And it's cleaned up really well considering it's been sealed for 5 years. There's not really any cobwebs or.
Yeah, that house was one board of wood from being like a crack house or somewhere, some squat house for, you know, people to hang out in without anybody knows, or teenagers to drink beers in, you know?
Yeah, I can't believe it's like they were able to keep it out with just that. They had to have like maybe sealed the windows too or something, because I could see people trying to get in. Because it's a
It'd
nice
be full
house.
Of spray paint and garbage if it was anywhere else.
Oh, yeah. And when they sealed it up 5 years ago, apparently that was when it actually happened, when the homicide detectives found it. So it's fairly recent that all this has gone down. So it's not even like, you know, it's some super historical. It's something that's fairly new. And so they go into the kitchen first, and it's got this cool like old double stove, and for some reason they still left all the food in there, which I thought was weird that they didn't clear out the house more, or maybe because they even left some of the stuff in the kitchen where I would think that you'd put it in like an estate sale or something to, you know.
yeah funny observation. I think they've got like the lima beans on the table and the flour and all that, so yeah, it's kind of a weird that they didn't get that out of there.
Yeah, that they weren't like trying to even to make up money for maybe if she owed money or back money for stuff, that they would just sell it all. But they kind of left it up like a monument. And so he's looking at the lima beans and things, and these two big rats come out and scare the crap out of him live on TV.
But look at the counter. Canned goods, foodstuffs, dishes, plates. Kidney beans. It's as though Ada Ritter never left.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Well, at least we know there are still some inhabitants in this house.
It's his fucking family.
And it's like, of course they're there. There's this really old food there. You know, I'm sure there's tons of them there.
Around this point, did you feel that they're either this Horton guy or his other people, the camera crew and other people that hate him, are setting up this type of stuff? So setting up the rats or setting up some kind of big prank?
Not really. The food out made me a little suspicious, because I was like, you know, I don't know if they would set up the rats, but the fact that I feel like you would have gone in and kind of took a look around before you did this, but I guess they wanted it to be super realistic.
Yeah, it reminded me of the like Geraldo Rivera live episodes that he did back in the 90s where he did, I think one was like an Egyptian tomb. Mm. One was actually one that they referenced in this episode about Al Capone, you know, out in Afghanistan. He did a lot of live events like that. And this very much felt like that, which I almost thought that his name was kind of reminiscent or kind of a spoof of that with Horton Rivers, like close to the Riviera. So.
Yeah. But there's a funny part here because there's a guy here on the production team. And as soon as he sees the rats, he says a comment about Horton and he's like, oh, it's his family. It's family reunion. You know, kind
burn.
Of yeah.
Got
like, that's how they all feel about him and stuff. And so they move on to the parlor after this. And this is where Ada would play music for the men that she would house here. And so they're kind of checking around and everything's, you know, a little dusty, but they mostly got everything covered up. And so far, not a lot of things are happening. And so they're starting to get calls from like production that's saying, you know, the ratings are kind of not great and we need to probably get some more stuff going. And he's like, well, there's only so much I can do. So they head out of the parlor and they head over to under the staircase, which is where the homicide detectives found the bodies that Ada Ritter would, she'd keep them down there. She kind of would throw the men down the stairs. And it seemed like a lot of the men were kind of older anyway. For, I think transients, that's kind of like homeless or like nomadic kind of thing, isn't it? Yeah. But they all seem to be fairly older.
Yeah, so I mean, a tumble down the stairs will do it. Doesn't seem like the most effective way, but sure.
Well, I guess if it doesn't work, you just take care of it when you get to the bottom.
Yeah, you make it look like an accident, I guess, right?
Yeah. And so she would have them fall down the stairs and then come down there and chop them in little pieces and put their body parts in the walls of the basement.
Possibly the most work you can do.
Yes. She's keeping herself busy. And that's where, like, the homicide detectives discovered all this. So they head into the side room down in the basement where there's, like, an empty hole. And that's where they found all the parts behind this rock wall. And this part's kind of gross because, like, they're getting ready to cut to, like, commercial. And Horton, there's, like, some soot and things around there. And he's, like, running his hands through it. Which, you know, there had to be, like, some decayed body matter in there somewhere.
And poor old cameraman Tripp just has to get his close-up of this, right?
Yeah. And he's speculating of all the things and reasons she might do this. And he's trying to make it a little more tantalizing, I guess, because of them complaining about ratings. And so for like 2 seconds, it cuts to this commercial. And
the best part.
Yeah. And it's like, if you blink, you'll miss it. But what it is an old Snuggle commercial. And it's kind of creepy because it just cuts to like the sleeping baby's face. And then the bear's like creepily looking at her like he's going to suffocate her or something.
Now, was this like a legitimate Snuggle commercial or did they reenact a Snuggle commercial?
I bet it was legitimate, because it was, this was 1990, I bet, it's just and this little baby whose name is Cindy, she's all grown up now, I'm sure.
Yeah, I rewound it, and just to make sure it actually was there, and I did catch it, I watched it on YouTube, so I'm like, wait, what was that? Let's see that again.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a real clip, I mean, that's kind of how they were. I don't know if they really, do they do the bear so much anymore? I don't think I've ever.
I don't know, yeah.
He's still on the bottles, I think, though. But, yeah, so then it just cuts to this quick commercial. And, you know, while that's going, they cut to Horton. And he's talking to the people in production, you know, saying, like, this is not, you know, we're trying to make this more interesting. It's not working. And the production's like, well, get up to the back upstairs because we're going to cut back from commercial in, like, 2 minutes. So they head back upstairs, trying to think of a way to make this more exciting. As they're heading up there, they hear this noise. So they go upstairs to check it out, and it's still like less than a minute before they come back from commercial. So they're still kind of looking around up there, and he's like, well, we hear this noise, so we need to hurry up and go live because something's going to happen, I think. I don't know what. So Horton goes over, and he starts looking in one of the doors that's kind of making noise. And at this time, the camera that Tripp is using is starting to have some issues. So you know something supernatural is going to happen. So it's all like squiggly and stuff. And then so Tripp is trying to look at the camera to kind of figure it out. So he's got it down to the side and, you know, they're trying to get it done in like 40 seconds before they cut back from commercial. And again, I feel bad for this camera guy. I don't think he cares that he's here. You know, it's just another job for him.
Just there to get a paycheck.
Yeah. He's just there doing like whatever. And
it really makes you wonder, like, if any of the people believe in any of this, either at the current moment, you know, believing that this place is haunted or just in what they're doing in general with this show. Like, everybody pretty much seems like they know it's BS and they hate this guy for it, you know?
Yeah. So everyone's just like, it's late. Let's get this done, you know, because I don't know how long you're planning on staying, but I'm assuming it's probably like at least like 10 o'clock at night already. And the woman in the production thing is saying that it.
Horton, do you hear dripping water?
Yeah. So what?
The utilities have been off for years. That place should be bone dry.
Sam, what do you want me to do? Read the meters?
Just check it out if you can.
So he heads over to the dripping sound in the bathroom upstairs, and he opens it up, and this part's pretty creepy. There's this old man, and he's, like, in these real, like, flimsy, tiny little, like, tidy-whitey things, and he's in this bathtub that's, like, filled with blood, and his throat's been slit.
Yeah, this was, you know, a pretty disturbing scene, especially considering I feel like when I first watched this, I was probably around the age of six or so, six or seven. So I'm sure I ate it up, but at the same time, a little bit spooked on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times it was the Crypt Keeper himself I found kind of frightening. So like I could watch the episode, but then it's like in the beginning and the end, I'd be like fast forward, you know, like through.
So, you know, this is maybe the nerdiest thing in the world, but for some reason, I feel like Tales from the Crypt and like watching like Nightmare on Elm Street was one of my favorite, you know, series or movies. But watching those types of things didn't scare me as much as if episode of X-Files came on.
Oh,
because
yeah.
For some reason, X-Files to me felt like this could be real.
Well, and it's that theme song, too.
I knew the Crypt Keeper wasn't real, you know?
True. I think it's just they did him so well, like with the puppetry, that I was like, eh. Like, and his laugh is creepy. Now I think he's hilarious, but...
He's a very punny guy.
Yes, very punny. And so this guy's here, and he's staring at him, and his throat's been cut, and Horton's like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, like someone's in there. And he's calling the camera guy over, and he's like, come here. And they go, and they look back inside the door, and the guy's not there. And the bathroom's clean and empty, and Tripp's like, what's happening? And he's like, I think this guy's crazy. He's seeing things.
Tripp, did you see any of that?
No, man, I didn't.
And Horton's like, no, it's seriously there, you know? And they're like, okay. And so they go to, like, cut back for the commercial. And when they do, the house starts, like, having all this poltergeist activity. The doors start opening and closing. And the chandelier is shaking. The tables are shaking. And so now they're starting to get scared. And Horton's starting to definitely suspect that someone's in the house or, like, trying to play a prank on him.
Yeah. So, like, he's catching on to it. And it makes you wonder, like, what the people back at the office that are, you know, kind of running the ship actually feels going on here, right? Like, it gave me some suspicion that something more fishy was going to happen, where they were actually setting it up to scare him, since they obviously didn't have a taste for him to begin with.
Which I'm sure he suspects. It's just the people in the production, they seem scared too, but then they're also kind of like, they might not even think of each other like, did that person set it up? Or, you know, but like not everyone knew about it maybe, or was there something we missed and they did something and we just don't know? So they're like, go with it. It's fine. They're fine. I mean, they're not too worried about Horton, but Tripp didn't mean no harm. He's just there doing his job. But so all this is going down and they're freaking out, and Tripp's got on camera, and there's this cool scene here that one of the doors is like cracking, and then as it's cracking, it's like bleeding from the top. And I thought that was a really cool effect. It's just like this door is about ready to bust open, and then all this blood and stuff.
It's like what you would hope you'd see on any ghost hunters, but never happens.
Yeah.
Like all you get is the indistinct noises that they then play later on and somehow turn garbly noise into an entire sentence.
Yeah.
But you never get that bloody door, you know? That's really what you're hoping for.
And so Horton's trying to, I think he thinks that someone's doing this, so he's trying not to look too afraid that he really is. Tripp's already terrified. And so...
The old bloody door, the oldest trick in the book.
Yeah. And so he's like, okay, Tripp, put the camera on me. We're going to do this. And so they go live or whatever, and he's like, ladies and gentlemen, we're experiencing, like, the first ever psychic phenomena on TV. They, like, cut to the psychic, and he's like, yeah, this is, like, a poltergeist, and...
Two forms of phenomenon, a psychic impression and some poltergeist activity. Both rather common in the world of psi phenomena. What is happening is not unusual for a site where a violent event has taken place. Frequently what happens is that an impression has been recorded by the walls and trapped inside and plays over and over again.
Kind of like an instant replay.
Yes. Whereas poltergeist activity is the actions of a mischievous or malevolent earthbound spirit.
Are we in any danger?
You were in danger the moment you crawled through the threshold.
You know, so they're thinking they're like kind of getting this history in the making kind of thing. And I think Horton's still trying to stay calm because he's just like probably going to find out later this is all fake and they just didn't tell me so they could get a real rise out of me or whatever. When they go back to, like, a commercial, Horton's like, okay, seriously, though, I still think someone's in the house. We need to call the cops. And the lady that he kind of snubbed was like, nah, we're going to keep you in there. It's fine. So it's like, even if there were someone in the house that, like, wants to kill him, she's like, it's fine. Keep the cameras on. We need the ratings.
called that payback.
Yeah. She's just like, I can't with this guy. So then he's starting to walk over, mad that no one's coming to help him. And he looks down and he's walking through the parlor and there's this blood on the floor. And this part's kind of my favorite just because it makes me laugh. And there's this blood on the carpet and he follows it and he's calling the camera guy over and they're looking at it. And then behind him, these pair of sneakers start swaying because poor Tripp is being hung behind him.
It's Tripp. Horton? Horton, who's got the camera? Oh, Jesus!
And then even the people in production are like, who's got the camera? And then they cut over and it's one of the dead men. It's one of the ghouls or whatever.
So yeah, the dead men are then filming their own reality show. It's really a weird twist, right?
Yeah, he wanted just to kidding. Try it out. He was, so I just thought it was funny, like they hang him and like, because he's bleeding, I guess they cut his throat too or something. But then the fact that he would even grab the camera to be like, let's help this guy find out what we're doing. So then that's it. Now Horton is terrified. And the people in the production or thing are like, what's happening? And he runs to go leave down the stairs. And then all the men that she's killed are kind of coming up the stairs after him, which I find it weird that they even, it seems almost like they're being menacing. It's like they were murdered by her. I don't know why, unless they're wanting him to join him or like join them or something.
Yeah. It's almost like they're helping out the person that killed them in the first place.
Yeah. It seems kind of.
Maybe they're just like super bored. They're like, hey, we need another one of the boys to come hang out.
They're like, yeah, we've been stuck here for 5 years. Can we please get someone in here? And so the camera is on the ground and it's still lit up and kind of taping and he falls in front of it. And everyone in the production thing is like, oh my gosh, should we cut? You know? And they're like, no, keep it on.
Keep him in there.
Damn, help me! Get me out of this house!
And then as the men are kind of closing in on him, the ghost of Ada comes up behind him and comes after him with a chainsaw.
Up until the point that Tripp died, I was thinking that there may be a twist somewhere in here where everything that he's seen is just like visions being haunted in his head and no one back, you know, at the TV station are actually seeing any of this, and Tripp's not seeing any of it like he wasn't in the beginning.
Yeah.
But then that was kind of thrown out the window, obviously, with what we get.
Yeah, and I'm glad it finally does kick off with the hanging or whatever of Tripp, but yeah, it kind of seems like there should be maybe a little more to the episode or something.
Or that like he had something to do with like the murders or with Ada or the something with the house or something. No, I just kind of thought that there'd be something more to why they're actually targeting Horton, other than the fact that he obviously doesn't believe in this and he's just doing this for ratings. So
well, yeah,
so
no,
I guess that's
him.
Kind of the thing.
He's just kind of a bad guy to be around. But it would have been, I think, kind of neat if he actually was setting it up, not telling anyone. And then when they get back in there and he thinks it's part of the setup, but it's not. And then he gets real scared. Like that probably would have been a little better.
You know, if that new series of Tales from the Crypt came through, we can pitch them all our ideas with how they could have done the episodes.
I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of that anyway.
I thought it was so weird that they actually put out promos or teasers for it. Like, they filmed those teasers, and then it got dropped anyways.
There's so many reboots and remakes right now.
Very likely would have been ruined. And originally, I heard that it wasn't even going to have the Crypt Keeper, which would have been stupid.
Yeah.
Then I heard they were going to have them, and then it got canceled. So it's just one of those things. It's kind of like when they tried to reboot Twilight Zone in the 80s and the 90s and even the early 2000s with, like, Jessica Simpson in an episode. Like, all of them were like, I'm going to watch this because I'm a fan of the series, but going into it knowing and not shouldn't expect much.
Plus, what's neat about these old ones is there's so many different actors and actresses that took directing parts and took other parts. To like, each episode's kind of different in that way.
Yeah,
like, it's
true.
Not like a set cast or anything like that, which is kind of fun. So Ada's chasing him with the chainsaw, and he's trying to get away from her, and he's running towards the window, and they got these old drapes on there, and there's like big knotted ropes for pulling the drapes open, and he kind of gets tangled up in them, and he ends up jumping out the window, and it just wraps around his neck perfectly to where he hangs himself outside the house.
On live TV.
Yeah, on live TV, and it's pretty creepy because like, it happens so fast. He just, like, flies out, and then he's like, whoop, and just swoops down. And it all gets on live TV, and they, like, zoom in on his face, which I'm like, okay, well, now you can't hide the fact that this happened. And so everyone's like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe that happened. And they're definitely, like, done now. I'm pretty sure that, I mean, besides him being dead, they're definitely done, and people are going to be calling and being like, did he really die? You know, because everyone, probably kids, too, have watched this guy just die outside on live TV. That's pretty much in the episode. They have him hanging out there. Cuts back to the Crypt Keeper, and he's watching TV and having snacks and
Crypt Keeper.
You're so punny. And the best Crypt Keeper pun is...
Oh, that Horton. He's a real swinger. He hangs out in all the right places. No wonder he's such a hit on Live. Or is it dead TV?
All in all, I mean, it's not a most memorable one, but it was fine.
Yeah, and I was surprised that this one was ranked so high. So when I looked at the list, this was consistently in the top 10, sometimes even top 5.
Yeah.
When you first told me this was the episode we're going to be doing, it sounded vaguely familiar based on the name, but it wasn't too memorable to where I actually watched it. I almost was like I was watching it for the first time. So it didn't have the staying power for me. It was entertaining, though. I just wanted more when I watched it. Like, I wanted some kind of deeper meaning, which I was continually trying to assume where it was going to go, and it just took a much more straightforward path.
Yeah, there's been a couple episodes that I've seen them all before, and then when I go back to watch them for this podcast, it's like at first I'll be like, that one, and then either I'll watch it and I really like it because I'm like, oh yeah, I remember this one, or I'll watch it and there's been a couple that I'm not a huge fan of, but I mean, I also have some favorites, and this one, when I was watching it, I knew the name. Yeah, again, it sounded familiar. It just feels like there should be more to it. Or it really doesn't like hit its climax until like the last like 5 minutes.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing that I actually liked about it, and wish they would have kind of went deeper into, is it kind of reminded me almost like, and this is gonna be a weird comparison, but the movie Running Man.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of that, they kind of have all these like reality shows that are supposed to be future reality shows, where it's basically showing how ridiculous things get just to get ratings. Like, they have this one where it's just this guy running from dogs and the dogs are just destroying him, you know, and it's just like that kind of super extreme shock type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of show how crazy media culture is getting. And I felt like this like dabbled in that, but didn't really go anywhere terribly interesting with it. It just kind of it spoofed what was already out there, like you had mentioned, you know, with there's obviously other shows that were doing this at the time, and I think it kind of was spoofing what was already out there, but not necessarily taking it too much further.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing about the spoofing and stuff that you're talking about, like all the shock TV, there's actually an interesting trivia from IMDb that I got. The guy that plays Horton Rivers is a man named Morton Downey Jr., and he's actually spoofing his own show on the episode. He had a show in the 80s, so like a little bit before, because this is 1990. So shortly before this, he had a show that he was a host of. It was like a shock jock kind of talk show where people would like discuss things like political and things that would get people like real riled up. And then he would kind of mediate, but then he would also kind of be a shit disturber about it. It didn't last very long, I don't think, from what I saw.
Yeah, you know, that makes the episode for me a little more enjoyable to know that. And
yeah.
It makes me question, like, if this guy, if he pitched this to the writers, or if the writers wrote this with this guy in mind, or how that all kind of came to fruition.
Yeah, and it's kind of neat that he can, like, poke fun at himself, you know, a little bit with it, and even though his show by then was over, I think. So it's kind of fun. So, yeah, that kind of makes it a little more fun. When I read that, I was like, oh, okay. So I had to look up the show. And do you have any other certain favorites of Tales from the Crypt that stand out to you?
Yeah, my favorite of all time, and maybe an obvious one for a lot of people, is The Death of Some Salesman.
Yep, that's
I think
that's
Tim
my
Curry
favorite.
Was so awesome in that. It's really funny. I mean, it's like he's such a fun character in anything he does, and this episode especially. So that one was great. I think some other good ones were, let's see here, Abracadabra was a pretty classic one, and then Dead Right. So the guy in Dead Right that plays the you know, the dude that goes to a strip club and falls in love with the girl, he's just like so much of a creepy human being, and just like a disgusting dude. And I think that was always a fun one to watch.
Yeah, and they do so good on like all of the different costumes, the practical effects and stuff, like all these like fat suit things, and like even with Death of Some Salesman, which is one pretty much my favorite, but I won't get to that till season 5, so I have some time. But
teaser,
yeah, but
it's a cliffhanger.
It's definitely, they just do so good on just making it grotesque and weird, and it really does stand out. And yeah, he's so great at what he, Tim Curry's so great at what he does, and Dead Right was a good one too. Yeah, I mean, there's so many good ones that I'm looking forward to and ones that I've done, and then it's neat kind of getting the lesser-known ones in between. Like, I recently did Fitting Punishment, which was season 2, episode 12, and I'd kind of forgotten a little bit about that one, so it was kind of neat going back through it and being like, oh yeah, there's some fun stuff in this one, and that was definitely one where the guy got what was coming to him.
Yeah, and that seems like one of the reoccurring themes on Tales from the Crypt, is it's always like the character gets what's coming to him. And that it does, I think it does a good job at normally setting that up. Sometimes the story's very straightforward, but it's obvious why it happens.
Or it's that, or like it's a couple, a married couple that's having marital distress. That's always another one too. Yeah. So
do you, when you watch these, do you ever go back and like look at the comics or anything, or were you a fan of the comics?
I never really knew a lot of the comics. I mean, I knew of them and I think I've seen a couple like at stores and stuff, but I never was like a big comic reader. I really,
but it makes me wonder like what liberties were taken in the episodes.
Yeah. Cause some of them weren't taken straight from the comics, but there's a couple episodes that they'll definitely point out in the beginning of the episode that it was taken directly from like this Vault of Horror episode or article. But yeah, so I mean, I wasn't super into them. It is fun to kind of go, like I have seen them and it's neat to see how they draw it. I always preferred horror comics anyway, if I had to pick any.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, that's basically it here. The next episode will be season 2, episode 17, My Brother's Keeper. Brandon, thank you very much for being on the show.
Yeah, hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, is there anything you'd want to plug on here?
Let's see. So American Standards, we have a new song, a new single called Weep, which we'll have a music video out for right before our tour at the end of March. So if you go on to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or pretty much anywhere you find bands or music, you'll find American Standards and you'll be able to see the tour dates. It's very Pacific Northwest heavy, so we're playing quite a few shows in Oregon and Washington and looping back down. So check that out and keep an ear out for the new song.
Awesome. And then in the future, would you ever come back and do another episode?
Absolutely. I would love to come back. I don't think it's very often that I hear people talk about Tales from the Crypt, and it's kind of hard to bring it up in casual conversation when everybody else is talking about whatever relevant show is on right now to bring in a show that's like 20 years old. So I think wearing a t-shirt like helps edge that into conversation, but I think it's really cool what you're doing with the podcast. So I would love to come back on.
Awesome. And thank you everyone out there for listening to the Good Evening Kitties podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe. I like 5-star reviews on iTunes, 5 stars. And there's also a Facebook page. And again, thanks for listening.
I just had quite a scare. I actually thought my heart was beating.